Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to Onceable, episode 79. We'll be discussing season 5, episode 10, Broken Heart of Once Upon a Time. I'm Brittany, and tonight I'm joined by Karen and Laura. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi. 79. I don't know where I was, but I don't remember having done 78 episodes before this one.
I know, right? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we're getting up there.
I mean, we get up to our own 100th episode. We could put ourselves into syndication. I mean, we kind of are already, but that's just kind of awesome.
I demand a cake.
That's it. Send us cake. Send us sweets to Hypeable. We don't know how we're going to do this, but we will take cake and cookies. Send us.
Yes, please. I love cake and cookies, and it's the holiday season. So, I mean, send it now, and we'll definitely get to 100 episodes. We'll just make that
send us
promise,
send us.
But
cookies.
I want it now.
Send us sweets. There's incentive.
We'll take pictures and post them when we get to our 100th episode.
Yes.
There we go. Plan.
So before we get to our 100th episode, though, we're going to talk about this action-packed Hook episode, which is also the penultimate episode of 2015. Before we reach the winter finale next weekend. And it was a little intense, and I kind of loved every single second of it. So I typically will never... So I'll just give my instant reaction first since I'm rambling. It is a huge thumbs up for me. I will typically not rewatch an episode of Once Upon a Time just because I don't have time and I'm more like, eh, that happened. I will rewatch this episode 100 times. It was so good. Colin O'Donoghue knocked it out of the park. I don't know what else to say. It was wonderful. But I want to hear what you guys think. So Karen, what did you think? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Definitely a thumbs up. Killian was delicious in this episode. He was amazing. This is what I've been wanting from Emma, is this sort of insane, over the top kind of dark one, and she hasn't given that to us, and I think there's a reason for that, but it was disappointing anyway. I really enjoyed seeing him this way, and this episode definitely makes up for the fact that we didn't see them at all in the last episode.
Yeah, that last episode, again, it was there. I wasn't a huge fan. But Laura, what did you think of this episode?
It was definitely a thumbs up for me, too. And I know, or actually everybody knows, I am not the biggest Captain Hook fan. I know I am the odd one out on this podcast. But I really liked this episode. And I really liked that Colin O'Donoghue got a wider range of material to play with. Like, I really felt like not that I didn't respect Colin O'Donoghue as an actor before this, but I think a lot of the material for Captain Hook has kind of put him in a very sort of narrow wheelhouse of the kind of material that he's been given. And I felt like he was really able to expand and grow as a character and as an actor. And as I was watching this, in my mind, there are other roles that I could see Colin O'Donoghue doing. And I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, you've got so much more talent than this role has previously allowed you to do. I was very, very impressed with Colin O'Donoghue as an actor. And then there were just other script moments that we will definitely, I'm sure, get into that I was super, super happy happened. Especially a scene between Zelina and Regina. I was so thrilled that somebody finally called Zelina out on her BS, and I was fist pumping the air in that moment. So yeah, thumbs up for me.
Yeah, and I will add that Kristen also loved this episode, as did Jen. They loved everything to do with Hook, but unfortunately they could not be with us tonight to give their thoughts, but we'll get all of their reactions, and hopefully next week if we can get everybody on. But let's move into favorite quotes before we start breaking down full-on dark hook as this GIF that I've inserted into our doc is staring at me.
It's so distracting.
It is really distracting.
But I'm not going to look away.
It's particularly distracting. It's right above my quote, and I'm getting, like, dizzy looking at the GIF right now, actually. We should probably put a link to it in our show notes so people know what we're talking about.
Yes, I will. But Karen, what was your favorite quote?
Okay, I have two. Runner-up was when Regina tells Emma, fine, you're being stupid, so stop it. I just love the complete, like, directness that Regina has when she talks to Emma. And she's kind of the only one that doesn't beat around the bush, you know, because Emma's parents are all like, oh, we understand. And it's this very caring and emotional kind of way of looking at things, which isn't necessarily bad, but Emma needs that kind of strict, like, no, stop it kind of thing sometimes. And so Regina's the one to give it to her, of course. And then my next one, my top one, which is, I'm surprised nobody stole this before me, and I'm not doing an accent, Brittany, sorry. But it's it's when Hook goes, get your affairs in order, dearie, for we duel at noon on my ship. And like I was saying before, I'm so glad he had that little bit of rumple in him, that he was being a little dramatic. And it was I think it was Caitlin on Twitter who was like, man, Dark Hook is such a drama queen. And I loved it. It was perfect.
I love this. I said this earlier. It was like, who could be more Celtic in that moment? Like, it was just hilarious. You know, I was like, oh my gosh. It was kind of brilliant. I also thought it was kind of funny, but it reminded me of a little bit was earlier in the season when they introduced Merida. And I remember saying that episode when the strongest Scottish accent does not belong to Rumple. You know, it was just so funny hearing Colin O'Donoghue imitate him. And actually, I think he very much kind of tones down his own natural Irish accent. And he just totally went for it and played it up. And I practically fell out of my chair laughing. I thought it was so funny.
Yeah. And he's had like centuries of this guy like taunting him. And then finally he just like let it all out in one little moment. Oh God.
I thought it kind of reminded me of a little bit was Comic-Con 2 years ago. I don't know if Karen will remember this or not, but the panel at San Diego Comic-Con 2 years ago had on it both Colin O'Donoghue and, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I can't remember the name of the actor who used to play Neil. His name just went right out of my mind. It's three words. We all know who it is.
Michael
Neil.
Something.
Yes, I can't remember what
it is. There's a Michael in there.
Yes, and you all know who I mean. So anyway, on the panel, it was him, it was Colin O'Donoghue, and oh my gosh, I am having such a stupid like brain fart right now. I cannot remember the name of Rumple. Robert Carlyle, thank you. So anyway, it was all three of them were on this panel.
Michael Raymond James.
I was just going to say
Raymond
that.
James. There we go. See, three names, I knew it. So anyway, the three of them were on the panel with other people. And I forget what the question was from the audience, but Michael Raymond James just basically interrupt him and he goes, look, he goes, you don't know what it's like up here with these two. He goes, half the time, it's going to be off color. So just sorry, I'm going to swear because I'm quoting him. He goes, half the time, we don't know what the fuck these two are saying. And it was because the two of them sometimes just talk like so fast with their like individual Celtic accents. They couldn't understand what they're saying. And the two of them did like a little like back and forth chatter there. And everybody just started laughing because we really didn't know what the hell they were saying. And that take tonight just sort of reminded me of that moment from Comic-Con. So I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and give your quotes while you're on a roll?
You got it. As long as I'm here. So I had two quotes. My first quote is from Henry, and I adored Henry in this episode. Again, I think it showed some really cool acting range for him. And he basically faces down Emma and he says, the minute things got tough, you didn't come to anybody. You decided you would figure it out on your own. We were a team. But now you just want your dark magic back so you can do it on your own. And I've seen what you do with dark magic. I was like, mic drop, Henry. I
Preach.
Thought that. Yeah, I was like, boom, that's it right there. And I just kept thinking, like, the whole time I've been saying, the only person who's ever going to possibly get through to Emma is Henry. And I just thought he totally, laid it on the line, called it. Like, it was just there. I really loved what he had to say and the way he had to say it. And it wasn't too over the top emo teen. I really, really loved how he phrased it and how he put it.
Yeah, he's been really good at handling these scenes where he has to, like, either he's mad at one of his moms or, like, something's, like, you know, when he had to deal with, like, Regina, you know, going crazy. I those were some of my favorite Henry moments. So I like when they give him the weightier material.
Yeah,
he continues to be the most mature and logical character on this show, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, I really like that, too. I also like that they are kind of exploring who he is as a teenager. No, like, they're finally letting him grow up a bit and have hormones, which is, like, way overdue. But I like that they're not making him a stereotypical teen. I feel like Hollywood does that very often. Like, they have this image of what teenagers are like that I don't think are always truly what teenagers are like. And I really like that Henry is kind of let to explore kind of the range of what it means to be teenage Henry in this kind of strange life where you go between what we would call like real life USA and once upon a time life. So I really like the way that he's given an opportunity to play this and not be some just like totally iPod obsessed online gaming idiot. And I feel like frequently a lot of comedies and things really do that and they don't make him go down that road. So I really appreciate that. I also had one other quote that I really liked. I think my theme tonight is people calling people out on their BS. The other quote that I really loved was Regina just totally calling out Zelina on what she has done when she catches up with her in the nursery. And she says, "The only reason you have that baby is because you deceived Robin in the most vile way imaginable." And then Zelina follows up with, "Is that a compliment?" And it just, to me, it just so completely magnified what we've been saying about Zelina, but it was nice to hear a once upon a time person say it about her, is that she's just, you know, it's not that we want to keep the baby from her. She's bananas, folks. She's totally freaking bananas. And Regina called her out on, you know, let's remember, you murdered Marion. You acquired that baby in the most vile way possible. And now you're trying to steal this baby because it's all about you. Like, you're not even thinking about the baby. You're just thinking about you. And even Zelina going, is that a compliment? Like, she just doesn't get it. She's totally psychotic. So I really kind of liked that. I felt Once Upon a Time finally addressed sort of what we've been saying on the podcast, because I don't think they've addressed, other than saying, oh, well, we can't let Zelina do this, they haven't talked about just her level of crazy is very different than other people's level of crazy on the show. And I think it was kind of important that they made that distinction.
Yeah, I enjoyed that moment. And then another moment, which we'll get to, that happens at a well, just a little hint for later.
Yeah.
Another thing we've talked about on the podcast a lot that the writers finally maybe finally caught on to. But my favorite quotes, I don't know why I love this quote. I love the direction that they took Hook. So mine came from him when he says, "Killian Jones said that you're lovesick puppy dog. That man died the minute you turned him into a dark one." And I was just like, this is such a bold direction to take the show. And I'm so into it. Because, like, I just don't feel like he's going to be redeemed quickly. Like, this is actually going to take hold. And I felt it in that moment. And I was like, yes, finally, I'm excited about a storyline. Like, this is not anything that I was expecting from the start of season 5. So this is really cool. My other two favorite ones were when he first rises from the vault, and he's just like, why does every dark one have to dress like a monk? Because he's like trying to like walk with the cloak on. And then when he finally switches into his like, you know, leather jacket again, and Rumpel, like the imaginary Rumpel, is just like, huh, I went with leather too. So I liked those couple of quotes. I liked everything that Hook said, really, though. But let's get started. So we have a lot of ground to cover. Finally, this week, our storylines merged. So we know everything that happened in Camelot, and we're caught up to the present in Storybrooke, which is finally, it's a huge relief. I was kind of tired of flip-flopping, but this week's flip-flop was really cool. So we start off in Camelot as Hook rises from the Dark One's vault, and he's kind of going through, he has all these like flashbacks of things that have happened to him in his life, Mila dying, his hand getting cut off, losing Emma, and like all of these things, like just like, and then he rises and he's in the cloak and all this stuff. But well, Liam, and one thing I noticed is that Liam dying wasn't a part of that, so that clearly wasn't, I thought that would be because, like, you know, some type of evil magic took away Liam, but that's okay, whatever, we'll get to it when we have the Hook-centric episode with his dad, probably. But do you think that Emma experienced anything like that, or was it just something that was unique to Hook, and let's say this probably happened to Rumple, where like they have this revenge buried inside of them, but Emma doesn't? That was just something I was thinking of this morning.
I feel like Emma is a very different Dark One. So first of all, I think we would have seen it if she had experienced that. But secondly, I feel like her transition into becoming a Dark One wasn't nearly as dark and evil and revenge-based as the other ones have been, which is kind of what I was saying before, because I feel like even though she acted selfishly, and even though she is using dark magic to create a scenario that works in her favor, I feel like she's being much better than Rumple, than Nimue, than even Hook. Like, Hook kind of went off the deep end pretty quickly. And maybe it's because he had so much anger to begin with. And Emma's act of becoming the Dark One initially was selfless. So I don't know if that means she's, like, a less evil version, but that's definitely the feeling that I get from that.
Yeah, that's exactly where my mind was, because we haven't really seen Emma go to that extreme, and I don't think we're going to at this point. And I think it's because she had so much light magic in her.
I feel like that's a part of it. I also feel like it's contained until under pressure. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I feel like, not that Regina was ever the Dark One, but Regina's almost every action was very conniving, very what have you. Like, it was just like a normal way of life for her. And even for Hook, even for Rumple, when he was the Dark One, that was like it for him too. Like, that was, I guess, what you could almost call his baseline. But I feel like Emma's baseline isn't evil. I think her baseline, I don't want to call it good, I want to call it kind of neutral. But when she hits like a stress point or a test, I feel like right now she's more apt to go a little bit to the dark side, because she's still, I think Henry really called it, she wants to try to do this all on her own and solve it on her own, and I'm going to do this. And I think that leans towards the dark side. I know that's very Star Wars sounding, but I feel like that's kind of how it's tipping with her. But her baseline isn't evil, if that makes sense. It really just sort of comes out more in what I would call it moments of stress.
Yeah, definitely. And she, like Karen was saying, or like when she was talking about her quotes, like, I feel like we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for this dark Emma to emerge and just like have like this like ultimate episode where she's like completely evil, and we're waiting for the storylines to merge, because we had that thing, that quote from Merlin where she's like, oh no, the Dark One's coming, and we're waiting for Emma to do something so drastic. But then it turns out that it's not Emma, and I don't think she's ever going to reach that point. I mean, in the preview for next week, we'll get to that later, but I don't think she's ever really going to give herself over to the darkness. I think she's a really strong a much stronger character than I personally was giving her credit for when she first became the Dark One. But in Camelot, Hook is not pleased that Rumple is the voice in his head, but he knows the gist of what's going on. So he's like, okay, I know you're here because Emma saw you. You're not real. I just need to ignore you and find Emma and figure this out. But then he starts to listen to Rumple almost immediately because Rumple's like, well, the thing you want is revenge. All you got to do is get back to Storybrooke and you can kill me. And he's kind of like, so my question is, was it shocking to you that it happened that quickly? I know we were saying that he has a lot of darkness within him, but I really wasn't expecting it. I was expecting the storyline to go the complete opposite way that it did, where he would be like, no, I just need to get rid of this darkness. We need to find Excalibur and focus and get this out of me. But he kind of changed really quickly.
I wonder if it has something to do with that plan that I don't think we necessarily know much about right now, but I feel like there's more of an underlying factor. But maybe you're right. I mean, Hook has spent a very long time being the bad guy, and maybe falling back into that habit is just easier with all of this power coursing through him. Because, I mean, Emma was the savior, and Emma is the result of true love, and Emma had extremely powerful magic, white magic. Hook never had magic. He's been the bad guy for so long. He's had a pretty crappy life up until now. I feel like, of course, Emma is going to have an easier time resisting, and of course, Hook is going to kind of fall back into those old habits rather quickly.
For me, I felt like he's, like, there are certain things I feel like the darker magic is attracted to more than, say, the lighter magic is attracted to. And I think he just got sucker punched very much. I mean, he got the total, like, punch to the gut of I think he's tried so hard to change, and he has, but he still has his doubts and everything. And he got to the point, I mean, and he even says it, he was willing to risk it all. He was willing to say, I am giving up my life for the greater good. And Emma went and took his free choice away. And I feel like that was such a gut punch to him, because he wanted to do something on his own terms. And it wasn't her call to decide what he was going to do, to decide that his sacrifice wasn't worth it. I think he just feels like very betrayed. And I think having those feelings of betrayal, I mean, not only betrayed because it turned him into, but because it also turned her dark because of everything it did. And I just feel like it's all of that is sort of marinating to really create the dark Hook. He's just really, really hurt and really, really wallowing in betrayal, and all of that very much leads to the darkness. So I feel like that's it. Plus, like, it's interesting because now, like, that he's aware he's the Dark One, I think there's a difference when he wasn't aware. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, I remember saying this whole, because, again, we know, like, I'm not the biggest Hook fan, but earlier this year, I know I was saying a lot of times, God, why is Hook so emo? Why is Hook so really emotional here? Isn't he overreacting a bit? And I'm going, oh my gosh, like, now I look back and I appreciate it. And I'm like, now that I know he was actually the Dark One, that actually kind of works why he was so overly inappropriately emotional. And I'm going, oh, little glimmers of the Dark One in there. So I kind of like really appreciate now that looking back on it. But I feel like now that he truly knows, it just kind of exacerbates itself.
Yeah, I feel like he's now, especially you brought up a good point where he feels this betrayal, and that really comes like to a like a breaking point when they're in the forest and Emma finally finds Hook and they're talking, and she does what he did for her when to get rid of Rumple. But that's not enough, because he still, the second he walks away from her, he understands something deeper is going on. She controlled him. She took away his free choice. She used Excalibur to find him and bring her to his presence. Like, you know, there's just so many things going against him. And he recognizes that, you know, this isn't what I want to do with my life. I'm willing, like you said, Laura, I'm willing to give up my life to make everyone else's lives perfect. And yet you're still making these choices that puts me in this position where I'm just this puppet in your plan. And he's not having it.
Right. I mean, it's almost like an extension to agree of what Henry is saying, too. You just went with you. You didn't talk to anybody else. Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah, it brings all of that into it.
Yeah. And especially at the outset of season five, Adam and Eddie were, they kept saying like, oh, Emma's selfish, selfish, selfish. And I'm like, I don't get that. Like, I wasn't getting that until these last three episodes. I'm like, this makes total sense as to why they kept pushing like, oh, she's going to make a selfish decision. And I'm like, oh, well, that just means she's like gonna save Henry. Like, that's fine. I'm in it. But this is like really pushing the limits of what constitutes being selfish versus, you know, doing something that ultimately will be for the greater good. So far, nothing of this is for the greater good. And ironically, it's his Hook's bro, number one bro, who like points it out to Mary Margaret. They're all like gathering to go and figure out what's going on with Emma and Hook. They're with Merlin and Lancelot, and who, by the way, where's he been?
I was like, oh, he's back. Okay.
Seriously?
And then they're like, listen, you're going to go and see your mom. It's a 2-day journey. Have a good time. And
see ya.
That's why he didn't make it back, is because he's with the Lady of the Lake. He's just chilling with mom. So I'm like, what is going on here? He didn't even have a line. He just sort of left. Anyway, but after that moment, David is like, listen, Mary Margaret, I'm just saying, I think maybe we should have killed Hook, but, you know, like, we could be done with this if you think about it. And Mary Margaret, like, shoots him these, like, death glare. And she's just like, are you kidding me? She's like, we literally share a heart because of something this stupid. And you are going to tell me that you wanted to just kill Hook because it would have been easier. And so he's like, all right, you're right. Never mind. Let's go save my bro and our daughter.
That was pretty great. Actually, yeah. I really liked that. But I have a question. This is an honest question. Going back a little bit, is like, okay, I realize that Emma's choice to save Hook was selfish. However, she didn't want him to die. She knew that this would save him. And also, her plan after she saved him was to take both of them back there and to get the darkness out of them. So really, like, how selfish is this? I feel like she's kind of been on the right track this whole time. And I honestly really don't understand why Hook is so mad at her for this plan because of that, but maybe I'm just missing something.
I think it kind of goes back to the whole selfish thing, I think, is that she was blinded by the one end goal of, like, yes, it was urgent. Yes, she had to make a decision right then and there to save Hook or not save Hook. But at the same time, she wasn't, like, see, I'm proving myself wrong in my own thought process. So this is good. I'm working it out. Because when she made that choice, I'm totally on your side now in the confusion by saying this, by the way.
Okay, good. Well, then it's not just me.
No. Because now I'm thinking the whole point of the beginning of the season and the end of last season leading up till now is that she had to make herself trust someone, and she trusted him enough to be able to fight the darkness, even though he said that he couldn't. Like, he's like, listen, I know that I cannot fight this once it's inside of me, but she made the decision anyway. She was just like, I am willing to trust my gut enough that I can make this, like, happen. But she also then again, like, went away from her whole family and was like, you know what? I'm going to figure this out on my own after the fact. So I think the selfishness kind of came when she went to Storybrooke, maybe not so much in Camelot with the decision to save Hook, but how she handled things afterwards. I don't know, but I don't see now. I'm not seeing it so much as being selfish as all, a poor decision.
Can we all just agree that none of this would have happened if Arthur wasn't such a douche face?
Oh, without a doubt.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Oh, he is so bad. I don't know what happened there, man.
I know. He's like the anti-Arthur. Like, he's just so, like, it's very difficult to find any glimmer of the Arthur, of the Arthurian legend in there. It really is. He's operating much more like Modred than anything else. And I think that's why my husband absolutely, like, he just continues to be seething rage angry at watching Once Upon a Time. Like, he just can't watch it with me. He leaves the room. He's very angry.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Arthur. Luckily, he wasn't in this episode that much. He was just, you know, attacked by a purple cloud of smoke. So that was nice. Yeah, so Karen, I'm confused and I don't know. And I felt very certain coming into this podcast and now I don't know. But that's good.
That's why we're here, right?
No, that's good. Yeah, I'm not sure why. Well, I do kind of understand why Hook is upset, though, because he didn't want this. He didn't have a choice in the matter. And I think it's all just like he's been kind of pushing down all of these, like, you know, his urges to, like, just take the easy way out for a couple of years now. And finally, he's just like, what was it all for? You're not going to listen to me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's just like that was kind of the final straw. I think it's been building for a while, but he's been so focused on making something work with Emma because she's been so weak in these past couple of, like, you know, not in our eyes weak, but in a way that, like, he sees that, like, any wrong move with her will set her off, and he doesn't want her to be scared or nervous. He wants her to finally feel safe. And now she made this decision where no one is safe. She's not going to be safe. Like, she's no matter what he does, she's not going to listen to him, and he doesn't understand why. And I think that all of the feelings of everything over the years, plus just having to relive everything coming into being the Dark One and then having Rumpel's voice in his head, I think it was just too much.
That must be the worst kind of torture, to have to deal with Rumpel in his head.
I know. And by the end of the episode, though, I'm kind of into their new little bromance. When they're, like, standing on the edge of the lake, I'm like, I'm into this. I like it. Yeah, so we kind of see Emma and Hook come back together. She brings him to the flower field, which hopefully we never have to see again.
What's wrong with the flower field?
I don't know. I thought it was a little too corny the first time they went there, and then when he was dying they went there, and now they're back there.
Flowers.
But they go back there, and Emma gives Hook Excalibur, and she's like, listen, I am trying to prove to you, and the only way that you can prove to a Dark One that you trust them is by giving over the sword. Which I felt, I don't know if she was ever actually going to do that in the first place. I thought that was kind of like a cheap move out to sort of get him, you know, to cooperate and listen and not freak out, as opposed to her making the conscious choice to be like, yes, like, you know, if Regina was going to give it back to her or something like that, it would have been a different conversation. I think this was just appeasement. And then it turns out he's like, okay, like, this is fine, but really it's not fine. So did you guys think when they were walking back up to the camp that everything was like hunky dory and they were going to go and figure something out and make it work? I mean, clearly we know that there's like this big question mark between Storybrooke and Camelot, but at that moment I was convinced that everything was fine.
I bought it.
Yeah. And I think that
hook, line, and sinker.
Ba-dum-bum-bum. Yeah, no, I just feel like there's always such a catch, like I was waiting for the catch.
Yeah, see, I'm a sucker for always waiting for the catch and then being like, okay, no, I accept this. And then the catch comes, and I'm like, ah, darn. I felt too comfortable. But this catch didn't feel like a catch. This felt like the ultimate, like, plot flip that I wasn't expecting. It wasn't a cheap way out. I was so excited when he went in there and locked the door with Merlin recording the message, and I was like, oh, it's going down. I was so excited, and he was ruthless in Granny's. He just like walks up to Merlin and he rips out his heart, and he's just standing there with it, and he's going to enact this curse because he just wants to get back to Storybrooke and just get the ultimate revenge, plus some a little bit more. We'll talk about what his real end game is when we get back to Storybrooke, but he just like he is so determined and evil looking, and that gif of his face when he's just, oh my God, I rewatched that scene like 5 times.
That
That
hair was on
hair.
point.
I've As listeners may know, I have not been a fan of the long hair all season. It paid off in dividends in this episode.
Was
Yeah,
so
it did.
good. But yeah, this scene, I think this is one of the scenes where I was like, Colin O'Donoghue is having the time of his life right now. Like,
Yeah.
he has some hefty stuff to work with, and it was so good. But I want to know, I will stop talking about this because then I have to get over a tragic loss of a perfect face in a little while, so.
I have to say, I really, like I said, it's no secret that I am, as a generality, not thrilled. It's just not my point of interest, is the whole Hook Emma storyline. Like, it's not my biggest moment, and I haven't been the biggest fan. I don't know that I ever will be the biggest fan of that storyline, but I will say that this is the episode where I became a fan of Colin O'Donoghue. Very much so. And I really, really liked what he did as an actor. And if there are any people who cross over into the Outlander fandom who listen to this podcast, if you are, minor plug here for following our Google Hangout, Hang Outlander, when that happens. But there is a part coming up in Outlander, should Outlander get to season number 3, and we're pretty sure that it will. There is a part in Outlander season 3 that is the part of Stephen Bonnet, who is an Irish pirate, who is this very complex character. And I'm like, if Colin O'Donoghue does not get this part, he needs to read for it. He needs to do it. He would be so brilliant. And this last episode kind of convinced me that he has got the acting chops to really run with the part, and I really hope he reads for it because he would be freaking amazing at it.
I would like to see him do that. I have to catch up on Outlander.
Yeah, it is a very I don't want to spoil the book for people who haven't read the book, but it is a very complex character who is equally charming and utterly horrific. And that is such a great, intricate character to play, and a character who is very obsessive and at the same time can be weak like a little boy too. It's a really intricate character, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And the fact of the matter is the character is Irish. He is written as Irish. It's very inherent in who he is. I really hope he gets to read for that part because I think he would be flipping amazing, and it's a part that wouldn't be every week, so he could potentially do it around his Once Upon a Time schedule.
Speaking of charming yet insane, Nimue comes back,
Accurate.
and she so in order to enact a curse, you know that you need to crush the heart of the one you love the most. Now, in order for Hook finds a loophole with the help of Spirit Rumple by saying, well, technically we could do that because the Dark One has access to all of the past Dark Ones, and Belle is nowhere to be seen, so they're not going to kill Belle. But they're going to take Merlin's heart and you access Nimue to do it because deep down, after becoming the first Dark One and like going crazy, she still loved Merlin.
Okay. So I'm so glad you said that, because I did not understand that to be the case. I thought it was just because Merlin was like super powerful and his like heart was an automatic, this will always work every time type of thing, but it makes so much more sense and it's so much deeper, the fact that he was Nimue's love. And yeah, so thanks for saying that.
No problem. That's the loophole of this episode of magic.
Totally.
They're like,
makes sense.
How are we going to do this? We can't kill Lancelot, so we'll do this. Thank God they didn't kill Lancelot, though. Although we lost our beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Merlin. Oh, man. So tragic. He's so pretty. Yeah, so Merlin is dead, and Rumpel has a great line when Hook is holding his heart in his hands, and he's just like, ooh, be careful with that. He's like, that's, like, the oldest heart, like, that exists. We should cut it open and count the rings.
I know, that was so warped. It really was.
So, yeah, Hook crushes the heart and decides to cast a curse to get everybody back to Storybrooke. But Emma thinks on her feet and knocks out Hook and takes his memory. So when he wakes up in Storybrooke, he'll have no – he will not remember that he's a Dark One. He will not remember that he has this plan, anything like that. And she also has to take the memories of everyone else. And so she, like, hauls her family in with the snap of her fingers to Granny's and takes all of their memories. And then she sort of – she drops the dream catcher into the curse, and so it's sort of like an added ingredient in the curse, so that when it takes over Camelot and grabs Merida, all of their memories are gone as well. So that's how that works, in case you know, there's another loophole would be like, well, I'll physically take these people's memories, but also if I drop it in, it also takes everybody else's memories. So that kind of catches us up to Storybrooke. They all wake up. We know what happens there. No one remembers what's going on. Hook starts to act a little antsy the whole rest of the season, and finally everything comes to a head, and we're kind of back where we were at the conclusion of two episodes ago, before the Brave and Mulan special hour, where Hook had Emma frozen in the squid ink in her house, and he got his memories back and revealed that he is a Dark One. So that's where we are in Storybrooke now, and I would just like to add my own personal commentary that I would like this Hook to come and terrorize my small town, because I would like him running around, you know. Just brooding by the docks.
Yeah, I love, as you were talking about catching up with Storybrooke and whatnot, I loved how they had Merida guarding Emma, who's just sitting there, like, placidly on the couch.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I could shoot you in the knee, or I can do this. And then Hook, when it comes in, is like, poof, boom, Merida's down for the count. And I'm so much for that guard arrow. Dog.
Anyone who can catch an arrow, I love it. Like, Regina.
That was pretty cool.
When Robin fired at her that one time when she was sneaking up to that cabin and she caught the arrow, it was like, oh.
Right. Well, I also loved how he just sort of just did this very blasé rip, like, wrist flick, and Merida fell over like a log. I was like, that's
Hook's
nuts.
Little flair for magic.
Like, yeah, it was just like
his little wrist flicks are like,
yeah,
seasons to work on what you would do if you had
right. Oh my god, it was like he was swatting a fly. He was just like, whatever. He just like was like very blasé, flip, boom, and she just was down. She really sold it. I thought that was actually kind of hilariously funny in a very slapstick kind of way.
Two things. One, if you like arrow catching, then you've seen the Avengers, haven't you, Brittany?
No, I have not seen.
Oh, okay. Well, Loki catches an arrow, so.
Oh, Tom Hiddleston? I like Tom Hiddleston.
Exactly. So, people catching arrows plus Tom Hiddleston, you should watch The Avengers. Two, as much as I loved Hook in this scene, because, yes, of course, he was brilliant, I was really into, like, super depressed Emma just, like, curled up on the couch looking mopey. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, because she has, well, right now she doesn't have any power. So just to catch everyone up real quick, Zelina, before she left, put her cuff on Emma. So Emma's magic is now, she can't do anything with it. And Hook took some of her memories so that she has no idea what his plan is.
Yeah. So she just basically, at this point, she has nothing to do but think. I kind of like that she maybe now has time to consider what she's really done. And I think Henry really kind of laid it out for her. So I'm curious to see if she comes around to realizing what it was that Henry was trying to say to her, and very really what Hook was trying to say to her. I'm very curious to see how all of that works.
Yeah, and I think she hit this moment when she was lying there that she really did realize what these people are seeing. They're not, because she kept everything to herself, they're not seeing the Emma who wants to rid the world of darkness. They're seeing this Emma who is literally doing everything in her power to push everyone as far away as possible. And Hook brings that up. He's like, I mean, it was awful the way he said it, but he's like, you are ruining your own life and you're too blind to see it. He's like, no matter what people give you, you won't accept it and you need to cut it out. And that's where he stands with this whole thing. He's like, I gave you everything and it still wasn't enough. You won't listen to me. You really deep down don't trust me. Whatever. I'm over it. I'm going to do my own thing. And that's kind of where her family is at when they found her. They went into the house and their whole plan was to, like, you know, stop Emma and Hook, because they thought Emma and Hook were doing something together. But when they find Emma without her magic, Regina, like, I think who had this line, Karen, was saying, like, she's like, yeah, you're being stupid. Like, you needed people around you to help you, to talk things out, to figure out what the best plan of action is, to remind you not to be going around and, you know, planning premeditated murders. You know, that's not, there are other ways around these things. Yeah, it's just, that whole scene was just, I think it was a great, it had to happen for Emma. And without having magic, without having the ability to do anything, like, she was absolutely helpless. It was, and watching everybody again say to her face, you need to stop, like, why don't you want us around, like, it finally woke her up. But yeah, what did you guys, like, how did you guys think she played those scenes? Because I thought it was, again, Jennifer Morrison, not the best actress in my mind, but I thought that these scenes were one of her best.
I thought this was the first time she's actually been, not as, like, Emma. I think Emma's great, and I think Emma is very three-dimensional, but the dark one, Dark Swan, she's been very blank this whole time for me, and I realize that's kind of part of the character, is to, like, keep your emotions at bay and act all powerful, but when she was, like, seriously looking depressed, I was like, okay, finally we have some emotion. Finally we have a look into her head, which I think is important not only to understand the character and their motivations, but to relate to them, because this is still Emma. She might have this Dark One power inside of her, but she's still Emma. Her reasons for doing things are still the reasons Emma has. She just kind of goes to very far lengths and very bad lengths to get them done. And I haven't been seeing Emma this whole time that she's actually been the Dark One until now. And she's starting to realize in her mind what she's done. And I think that's made her the most interesting so far.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think in this, when she's at her most vulnerable is when we're finally going to see, like, where are we going next with her? Like, I'm excited to see what's going to happen when she met up with Henry again. I thought that whole moment was fantastic. Like, she's finally realizing she needs to do the legwork to get back into these people's good graces. And it's, she's kind of in now Regina's shoes. She's not starting off as the product of true love and all this anymore. She's fallen, and now she has to start doing the work to get back up, which I think is going to be a really interesting arc for the rest of this season into next year.
Especially, like, what are the consequences here? Of course, she was acting under the influence of the Dark One, but like I was just saying, I mean, part of Emma is still there. Her motivations are still the same. It's just the way that she's going about them to get to that end game that is so bad. But this is going to have consequences. Even when she finally reverts back to herself, I feel like there are going to be a lot of emotional scars between her and Henry, between her and Regina, between her and her parents, especially between her and Hook. How long are those effects going to last? Because in my opinion, I don't think people are just going to be like, well, it was just Dark Swan, you know, that phase is over. We can go back to how things were. It's really going to change a lot of the relationships she has with other people.
Especially because, like you were saying, she wasn't acting on the darkness. She was acting more on her Emma instincts than she was taking into consideration what a Dark One would do. Because the whole time her motivation is to rid the world of the darkness. So, like, that is clearly not what a Dark One would do. I'm interested. I'm here for it. I'm here for Hook just staying evil for a little while longer. Because
just a little while.
If it means we get to watch him duel Rumpelstiltskin on the Jolly Roger, I'm okay with that. He goes, his first stop after he leaves Emma is to walk right into Gold's shop and demand his hand for a Hook, his heart for Mila, and his head for making Emma a Dark One. And that whole scene, his delivery, it was like the gauntlet was dropped and he was like, this is what I want. This is happening. I have Excalibur that I'm just going to pull out of thin air here. And yeah, I'm ready to duel. Meet me on my ship. You can kill me if you get the sword. Great. If not, I'll just take you bit for bit. And then they do duel. Rumpel kind of tells Belle, like, I have to fight him. You guys can go and, you know, research your stuff about the past Dark Ones, which nothing came of that. I don't think in this episode, at least, they were just sort of all in the library doing their thing. And I'm like, all right, I get we have to like hit the books every episode, but this is just too much. Like there had to be something else. But he goes and he's like, if I prove to be like a brave man and you think I can change and you want to give this one more shot, like, you know, cause I'm not dying. You don't have to pretend to be in love with me anymore. meet me at the well where we got married. We'll talk it out. Anyway, he goes off to his duel and he does. I can't tell. I tried to rewatch it before we did this, but I couldn't. If he does get the better of Hook and wins, or if Hook's just like, this is fine. I got what I needed. Because Hook, in the end, needed the blood of Rumpelstiltskin, and he got it. He had it on his hook. He cut his arm. But I can't tell if his plan all along was to give up Excalibur. I'm not entirely sure. It could be a fake. We've seen tons of fake daggers over the years. But what do you guys think about that whole thing? Do you think that Rumpel really has Excalibur?
There's always a catch. Like, that's the thing. It's really hard to, even if he does, will Excalibur do what it's supposed to do, wielded by him in his hands as he's limpy ruffle with his cane? Like, it's just, there's so many factors that go into it. I don't know.
I don't really have an opinion on this. I guess I didn't really think about it too deeply, but my one issue with this scene was after he got Excalibur, he just like dropped it on the ship deck and walked away. And I was like, seriously, that is the most coveted item in all of like the world of both worlds right now. And you just dropped it. Like, keep your hand on it. You're probably going to need it later.
Yeah, I thought that was weird too. I was like, I'm like, you of all people understand what a soul tethered to a sword does. And you're just like, nah, I'm good. I have enough crap in my shop to keep me occupied. whatever. But because he's a poetic idiot, he goes to the well and Belle's there. And he sort of is just like, oh, good, you came. Like, we're in love again. And she's like, actually, no, I'm gonna peace. I've taken care of you for far too long. It's my turn to take care of me and do me. And I'm pumped for Belle for saying that. And I hope it lasts for longer than a week, because God knows I can't take another Rumple and Belle being together. I need a break. I don't know how you guys feel about this whole thing, but I need a break.
Yeah. Okay. Here's my problem with this, mm-hmm. which is not the problem you probably think it is. I'm really glad that she said no. I'm very disappointed in the writing that she said no now. I mean, her scene where she controlled Dark One Rumple and pushed him out of town was beautiful. That's exactly what I wanted. But I feel like I don't want them together, for sure, because I think that's over with, and I hate Rumple, and I still want him to die. I think he's boring at this point. But, sorry.
Yeah, lots, no, I agree with what you're there. Saying. It was like Belle had this moment of clarity, and then it was like, poof, that clarity didn't exist. Like, well, I am fine if she came to another opinion, but I felt like we never saw the transition to that opinion. It was suddenly like, poof, this is how I think. And it's like, really? How did that happen? I agree with you.
My problem is that time and time again, when Dark One Rumple kept treating her so poorly, kept lying to her, kept going behind her back and doing terrible things, she kept going back to him because she loved him and she thought he could change. Now that he is literally a blank slate, has a pure heart, and no longer harbors the Dark One magic within him, she's like, no, I'm done. Like, if you're ever going to be back with somebody, now's the time. And like I said, I don't want them together, but I think within the writing, it just doesn't make sense why she would walk away at this point. It's like, this is everything she wanted handed to her on a silver platter, and she's walking away. Now, if they had said something about, you know, every time I look at you, I just keep seeing everything you've done in the past, and I've just fallen out of love with you, and I can't go back to seeing you as the person I saw you as before, that would have made more sense. But it was more like, I still love you, but I can't do this, even though you are a changed person through and through.
Yeah. My biggest problem with it was I felt like she was just like, well, you're not something for me to solve anymore. You seem to have your life figured out, so I'm going to leave. Like, I feel like she was saying, like, you're just not interesting to me anymore. What I look for in a relationship is someone I can fix, and you don't need to be fixed anymore. And I'm like, that's not why you should be leaving this
guy. That's exactly what I read out of that, and why I have a problem with, like, the writing more than the actual situation. It was just really frustrating. I think they could have handled that a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're done, for now. But there's another twisted couple that we got to get through real quick. And that's this, like, like, visitation rights guardianship of babyhood. And so Regina takes baby, we don't know a name, we don't have a name yet, I don't think. So
I just want to keep calling him Babyhood forever.
Yeah, so it takes Babyhood out of the hospital, and to protect her from Zelina. And Zelina goes to get the baby. And as Laura said in her favorite quote, like, Zelina, finally someone was like, you're actually, like, certifiably insane and should not be near anyone's child, let alone your own. So let's, like, you know, the one thing that made me kind of settle down was actually seeing Henry. And although it didn't, because when Henry was, like, nonstop crying, she, like, almost left him at the back at the orphanage. Like, let's not forget that she had a moment. But yeah, she's like, but it was that feeling of unconditional love that really made me, you know, put my life in perspective, all my actions, stuff like that. So she allows for supervised visitation with Babyhood, as long as Robin's there or Regina's there. I would prefer that Regina always be there because she has magic. And Robin, what are you going to do? Shoot her? That's not going to work. So, but maybe there's some lingering feelings there or something. I don't know. We can figure that out. But yeah, Zelina holds babyhood and is like, you know what? I'm feeling a little something, but I can't tell if she was just like psychotically breaking or if she actually felt love. That remains to be seen, I guess. If she actually loves her child or she's just completely insane and doesn't know if she's delusional.
I think she's both. Like, she can be insane and still love her child, but I think it's smart that they don't leave her alone with her because she's going to do whatever she can to warp that child's mind and to pit her against everybody else to make Zelina seem like the hero of the story when clearly she's not. But I agree with Laura. I think this scene was perfect. I think Regina's smackdown was needed. And I'm not going to lie, like a couple of episodes ago, I was starting to feel a little bit for Zelina because I was like, man, that's really horrible. They took her baby away. But then Regina reminded all of us all the incredibly gross things that Zelina has done to get to where she is now. And I'm like, you know what? You don't really deserve this pure child that you have now. And so whatever they can do to keep Zelina's time with the kid limited, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm also all for not allowing unsupervised visitation, especially because I don't want her to leave with the child thinking she can handle it when I don't think she can.
Well, the whole thing about it too is that I don't think she's even approaching this from the first second of this is a baby, what does this baby need? Like, it is so totally about I want something that everybody else has and I don't get my way, so I'm gonna get a child, and this child is gonna, like, it's so freaking warped. Like, it's I mean it's just beyond warped of where her brain is at and how she's processing this whole thing. Like, I just can't even imagine her getting a child. And as warped, I mean, let's be honest, she is Cora's child, and Cora was certainly not in the running to be parent of the year on any level. But at the same time, I don't think that Cora's every motivation in life was always all about Cora, although that certainly was a large part of it. But Zelina is very all about Zelina, and oh, I have been wronged, and this is what I need for me. She's sort of like the Donald Trump of the Once Upon a Time fandom, you know?
Oh my gosh.
I know. I send the hate mail to me. Like, honestly, there's some random Trump fan listening to this podcast who I've now offended. But no, I feel like that's what she is. She's so, it's all constantly about her. And anybody who disagrees with her, it's not that they may have a valid point. She sees it as a personal attack on her, and everything she does is all about her. She doesn't see beyond herself, and I feel that's very much who she is.
Yeah, and I agree. I like your point that, like, it's like, this is something that everybody else has, and if they see me with a child, like, you know, that'll be great because I fit in again and I'll have something that everybody
else
has.
Yeah, like, not that I need to get diapers, not that I need to get bottles, and not that I might too, oh my gosh, inconvenience myself to spend time with a child. Like, there's no even remote awareness of that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Can we give a shout out to Regina and how big of a person she is to be like, look, I hate you. I actually want you to die, but this situation is something that, like, kind of needs to be rectified in a non-murderous way. And so here's the deal. You can see your child, but, you know, it has to be supervised. And the look that she gives Robin, you can see the hurt in her eyes, how much this pains her to have to deal with her sister now for the foreseeable future. And yet she's still doing it. And I'm just blown away consistently by how selfless Regina is becoming. And I love it so much.
Yeah. And I think that Regina has an extraordinary amount of empathy that she's gained over the seasons because she, you know, if she was still acting the way she was in the Enchanted Forest, would anyone have trusted her to go and get Henry? Like, people came around to her being able to be a mother. Like, why should she rob someone else of that opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's, like you said, it's an extraordinary story to watch. But back to the more interesting story, Captain Hook. No, I'm just kidding. So we've kind of like to wrap up this episode. Emma makes her way into the library and kind of calls Henry aside and is like, listen, I don't have magic. I'm coming to you. I think we should figure out where the dream catchers are in order to give everybody back their memory, so we have the best shot of stopping whatever Hook's plan is. And she's willing to do it without magic, but she needs Henry's help because they're going to make a locator spell and they're going to find the wherever Hook put the dream catchers. And Henry, like, you know, he's taken his magical education very seriously. He's like, okay, we need this, this, and this. I need to have the material that you made the dream catchers with. I'm like, and all this stuff. And he even swipes the squid ink because he knows that, you know, in this moment, if Emma really does come through and they're able to go through this whole thing without her using this as a ploy to get back her magic or anything, that he will give her her magic back. And he does. She proves herself worthy to have it back. She came to them for help. She is willing to give them all back their memories, no strings attached. And so she gets her magic back and everything seems to be fine. Her and Henry took that first step, you know, back to being mother and son on an operation. And I loved it. Although they could have come up with a new name, Operation Cobra Part 2, not even the same operation.
So lame. I was so disappointed.
If I was Emma, I would have like tapped into some of my darker rage and been like, Henry, that's stupid. Like, no, you come up with it. We're not leaving this library until you come up with a better name. The writers used all of their, you know, great name things on Babyhood. So they were tapped out at that point.
Clearly.
Oh my God, Babyhood. I still am not over that.
When I saw that name tag, I was like, this is fantastic.
I was like, that is so wrong. His last name is not Hood. You know, it's like, I mean, it should be Baby Loxley, if anything. I don't know. Just having a moment.
It was so funny. So anyway, like we were saying before, during the battle on the ship, Hook got Rumple's blood on his hook. And in order to, all right, Karen, in order to open the portal to the underworld, he needed the blood of someone who has been to hell and back, and Rumple has. So he dips his hook in the pond because that pond that's been there forever is, you know, the entrance to the underworld. Why not? And as he dips his hook in it, the boat that came up when the Fury was there comes up again with Nimue on it. And all of the Dark Ones are summoned from the past and they're going to invade the town. So after everyone gets their memories back, they're like, oh, Hook's plan is to completely snuff out the light again. Worse, like, I wish they would just say something else when they're talking about this, because I feel like snuff out the light, it just makes it, reminds me of, like, Snuffleupagus in Sesame Street, and I'm like, that's not a threatening, like, evil plan catchphrase. I'm like, I would just like a different way to describe it, but that's what they're gonna do. Not really sure why Hook wants to do that. He doesn't seem... like, maybe he just feels this really deep connection with the Dark Ones, and that's what the Dark Ones want to do. Now that Merlin's not there, they really only have... they have Regina, who kind of has light magic, and if Emma's darkness is removed, she will also be able to tap into some light magic. But there's not much light magic to really, you know, combat them in Storybrooke, I don't think. So, what do you guys think is going to happen next week in our mid-season finale? And then we have to wait exactly 3 months to the day until a new
episode. My gosh.
I think it ends with like a cliffhanger of the duel end of Rumple and Killian. And I feel like there's going to be some extra person there or twist or something that leaves this all hanging in the balance. Like there's going to be some sort of innocent bystander involved.
Yeah, since the underworld has been announced or speculated or we've really blown it out of the water, out of the water. I still remain on the side of that Henry or, well, not so much Hook now since he became a Dark One and I wasn't expecting that to come. I think that Henry's going to die and they're going to have to get his soul back from Hades.
You don't think it would be Hook?
You know, I don't. My original thought was that it was going to be Hook, but I can't right now see anyone like justifying a reason to go and get him from the underworld. Because like David was like almost okay with killing him before, and Emma in the preview is willing to stab him with Excalibur. So I just don't. My original theory was that Hook was going to die. Emma would have to go into the underworld to get him. That's where the whole 100th episode would come in with all of these people coming back. And, you know, because Cruella's dead, Cora's dead, they're all coming back for the 100th episode. So I'm like, well, that makes sense. Like, you know, they got to go to the underworld. They got to see all these dead people. Pan, you know. So, yes, that was my original thought. But now I'm not so sure. I think it might be Henry. And Emma would have to go and get him if they snuff out the darkness. Oh, I hate it. Snuff out the light, or at least, you know, the threat of that is there. Then they'd have Henry would be the only person who could bring back the light. They'd have to go get him.
I mean, yeah, that does make sense.
What do you think, Karen? What do you think's gonna happen?
I don't know. I'm just thinking about the underworld and Hades and getting excited. I was dancing in my chair like 2 seconds ago. It's really hard to think. I will say that, oh my god, I was freaking out when Nimue was stepping out of the boat. I was like, what if it's Hades? What if it's Hades? Like, I knew he wasn't really supposed to show up. Yeah.
Like, they're gonna drop it on us.
And I was like, if they show, like, blue flames or something, I'm just gonna start screaming, and it would have been really embarrassing. It was a good thing I was home alone. I don't know. I still want to say that Hook's going to be the one to go to the underworld just because I feel like that would kind of solve the problem. I don't know if he has a direct connection to the other Dark Ones in a way that, like, if he dies, they'll all go away. You know, I'm not sure what sort of laws of magic are enacted here, but even if Emma kills him, if she knows there's a way to get him back, especially once she gets the darkness out of her, I feel like she's still willing to do that. I don't really see them killing Henry. I could be wrong, especially since, like, they'll obviously bring him back, but that seems very violent for Once Upon a Time and really, really tragic. But also, who would kill Henry? Would Hook kill him?
Lancelot. He hasn't really been doing anything. We don't know his motivations.
I mean, Nimue could probably kill him too, but
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like that's almost a step too far for the show, but they've gotten a little bit darker recently, so maybe it will go in that direction.
Yeah, this season is, oof. It is heavy, and I like it. I'm happy we're not doing, like, let's go hang out with Frozen, and then let's go hang out with the Queens of Darkness. Let's go to Neverland.
Yeah,
I'm like, I love this. Like, it's, really like, heavy.
Well, I also feel like on some of those other characters that they dropped in, like, for me, very much the whole Queens of Darkness things, like with Cruella and Ursula and, God, who was the third one even?
Maleficent.
Like, it was just like poof, they're there with no connection to anything else, and okay, poof, they're gone. And Frozen was sort of the same way. I mean, and they do have characters that drop in and drop out, but I feel like, even as my husband was calling it, he's like, oh, is it time for the Frozen commercial now? Like, it was just not I feel, as good of a story. And I feel like the story would have been better if we still had some interaction with those characters. Like, I'm really liking Merida. For me, it integrated a little bit more. It's not like this total let's go see Brave commercial. I feel like it's a little more natural.
Right, because rather than story, our heroes being a part of her plot, she's a part of their plot. And I think it's incorporated much more smoothly, which is far more interesting than, and less jarring than, okay, here's the season of The Wicked Witch, and here's the season of Frozen, here's the season of blah, blah, blah. Even Arthur, as much as I don't like them, has been incorporated into this entire storyline.
Yeah, and I may not always like what they did with this character, but I do find it a little more logical. The only part of that whole Camelot and Sword in the Stone storyline that I thought was just a little over the top, and I wanted to go, oh, really? It was a couple episodes back, and they had a couple of, like, as Emma was like showing how she became the Dark One, they were flashing to different things. And one of the things they flashed to was the clip of the 1950s movie, The Sword in the Stone. Just in case you kids hadn't got that movie, there's a clip, you know. That was actually the only part that I went, really? Are we going to do like a Lady and the Tramp next? We're going to show a clip of that. I think it's, as a generality, the whole thing has been done, as you said, Karen, much better, much more finessed.
Yeah, and plus they haven't there's a bit of a tease for next season. It's like, oh, it's like Hercules, the underworld and stuff like that, but it's not. It's like, oh, they're coming for one episode. So like you still don't know what's gonna happen. Like you're not spending like, you know, 13 episodes with these people and then like, oh, we'll like make sly references to them 20 episodes down the road, but you know, like, I think that this season is just, it's felt much better from the start.
I mean, part of me is wondering, you know, obviously, like, the Hercules thing is coming. And then after that, what's next? And I'm waiting for, like, Pocahontas to pull up in her canoe and rescue them as she sings Just Around the River Bend. You know,
I'm not opposed to that.
I would be into it.
Yeah, because we're starting to run out of movies. Or, like, Esmeralda and the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Like, there's another one that's, like, I'm, like, for real, like, we're starting to run out of movies.
Cars.
Like, curious where they're
going. Yeah. I mean, Cruella's?
Right. Or not for nothing, you get to movies that it's kind of a push. Like, are we going to have that very special Aristocrats meets Lady and the Tramp episode? Like, I'm waiting for the talking dogs or the humans who think they're dogs. Or I don't know. Look. Like, I feel like we're going to start to run out of material here at a certain point.
Aristocats is one of my all-time favorite movies, so I would be down with that. But I was going to say that Cruella's car is like the closest we've come to Cars so far, so
yeah, that's true.
They could kind of see, you know, kind of see them going in that direction. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, that would be ridiculous.
Yeah, well, they could just like drop one in the back. Will come to life and start talking. That'll be fun. There you go.
Oh, man. No, ban Pixar. We're like Toy Story, like Woody, just like a cowboy, and like as a Rocket Man.
Oh my gosh. If we had a live action Buzz, like just here to infinity and beyond, would be hilarious.
I would be so into that.
But it has to be like, it's just like Tim Allen hanging out at Granny's in.
Oh my gosh, yes. With nothing that
but
works.
But then it's like his wings just like pop out and then he like puts them back.
Yes. Like I want to watch him like try to zap like Rumple with his laser or something like that. Which is so funny.
Pew, 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 pew. That would be amazing.
All right. Well, now that we're done fantasy dreamcasting season 6 of Once Upon a Time, is there anything else we want to talk about with this episode in particular? You guys good? I could go on and on about Hook's hair and eye makeup, but that's, you know, that's for my own personal.
There's a lot of, like, I have a lot of speculation, but right now I feel like we don't necessarily have enough information. They could actually go in a lot of different ways with this. Like we were saying with, like, who's going to die? Why are they going to go to the underworld? That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think that Once Upon a Time, I don't want to say has found its groove because it's in season 5. It should have found it a long time ago, but it's becoming very unpredictable, and that's hard to do in season 5. And like you were saying, Brittany, I am here for it. This is a really interesting plot line, and I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't know who's going to die or you know, who's going to be evil for how much longer, and it's definitely piquing my interest.
Yeah, and like Laura was saying a couple times, like, yes, we are waiting for the catch, but the catches aren't what I'm expecting. It, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm waiting for something to happen. Like, I know that something's going to happen in the next scene or whatever, but I'm being caught off guard by what that thing is. Like, it's never my first three guesses, which I think is, like you were saying, it's something hard to do in season five, because if you have a formula and it's working and it got you to season five, why break that? But they're really overhauling it, and I like it. I'm into it. I love how dark it's getting. And they're not just like, you know, going to visit the Oaken Tavern with that guy from Frozen, which I still think was the best thing they did with Frozen.
Obviously.
But yeah, we'll have to see what happens with the winter finale next week, and we'll be back to talk about it, hopefully with everyone. And then going into a very, very long hiatus. Hopefully we'll get some news and we can have an episode in between those 3 months.
Oh my God, we can just talk about Hercules.
We should just watch Hercules and talk about it.
We should!
And like pick out everything we want to be in it. Yeah, let's do that.
That. Let us know if you guys would be interested, because I'm 1,000% serious I will do that.
And I'm happy to dig up all of my books from college Latin to look at the actual myths of Hercules.
Oh, can I tell you? I don't think I've said this on air yet. One time I went through the entire Disney Hercules movie and made screenshots of all of the gods and goddesses and like annotated who they were.
All right.
Because that is the type of person I am.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I used to quiz my brother when he was little on certain vocabulary words through Disney movies. I'd be like, what does that mean? Like, why did... And one of them was something that Hades said. I'll have to rewatch the movie to figure out what word it was. And I'd like pause the movie. I'd be like, what does that word mean? Do you know what it means? You can quote it, but do you know what it means? Because I was an awful sister. But anyway, so we'll be back next week to talk about Swan Song, episode 11. And then when the show returns, actually, it's the 100th episode, which is exciting. So 3 month hiatus and the 100th episode.
Cool.
But until then, I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Laura.
Bye.
Bye.